Our guest today is Joseph Dalen. Joseph was born in the heart of Mormonism in Provo, Utah. He grew up in neighboring Orham. I think I'm pronouncing that right. If not, he'll correct me. After living as a faithful member of the Mormon Church, which culminated in a two-year mission to Texas, he came out as a gay man in 1998 at the age of 23. He holds a BA in cultural anthropology and currently resides in Honolulu, Hawaii. His book, Perfect, with the exception of some name changes and minor alterations in chronology, is the true story of his journey, one in which every person who has had to deny their true self can relate. Joe, we want to welcome you to the program. Are you there?
Yeah, thank you, Terry. Good to be here.
Mark Powers is here with me, as you've heard Mark speak, and he's pretty thoroughly read your book. So I say aloha to you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today. I know you're in beautiful Hawaii. It's a little rainy. It's been a little rainy here today. We've got a little overcast going on, and you're probably sitting there in the sun. Are you on the beach or something? Are you doing this by your cell phone? Or?
Oh, I wish I could say I'm on the beach. No, I'm inside, but it is a beautiful day. It usually is here. Pretty hard to complain about the weather here.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, when you say that, everybody wants to move to Hawaii. That's why I never say how pretty the weather is in California. Before we get into your book, I wanted to ask you to tell us the story that sort of motivated you to begin writing this book, and then we'll get into your book because we'd like to hear it in depth.
Yeah. It was kind of an interesting journey just writing the book itself. I mean, you know, I've had people tell me who weren't in the Mormon Church, who heard my story and were kind of blown away by you know, how dramatic it can be. And when a gay person grows up in a highly religious environment. But when I first started writing, I really wanted to offer a resource to people, you know, like me, especially youth who can feel so isolated and so without purpose. You know, when you grow up gay in a gay adverse culture, you know, there really aren't any answers, and there you just don't feel like you have a place, and you don't see any options, and it's incredibly isolating and frustrating. And I spent so many years just in a quest to become straight. That was the primary purpose of my life for so many years. I just didn't see any way outside of that. And
Joe, this is Mark, and I was wondering if you could enlighten us as far as the title, Perfect. I think that's an important part of the Mormon faith, and if you could explain the title of your book, Perfect, and what it means.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, for a lot of the way I was raised in Mormonism, there was definitely this idea of perfection, that the purpose of life is to become godlike, to become perfect. And, you know, no one really expects you to attain perfection in life, but that really is what the goal is. And when you don't attain perfection, you know, it's a very frustrating thing. And that, you know, it manifests itself in many different ways. If you have, you know, a family that's broken up by divorce, or, you know, if there's a child who falls away from the faith, that sense of perfection is very confronted. And it's very difficult for people to deal with that. And I think part of my quest for perfection, you know, what I thought life was all about was passing this test that God had given me, which is what I thought my homosexuality was, that it was this test of faith, this trial, that if I only was good enough, if I got close enough to perfection, then I would be kind of graced with heterosexuality, that God would change me. So, and it seemed like, it just seemed so frustrating, because anything below perfection just didn't seem to be doing the job. I actually, at one point in my, you know, by high school, by the end of high school, I was reading the scriptures for 2 hours a day. I was listening to nothing but church music. I was just throwing myself into religion, believing that would do the trick.
Yeah, you can see that in your book. A good part of the book is you're praying and you're trying to reach this perfection within your faith, and I was wondering if you could tell us more about, as far as where a homosexual does fit into the Mormon faith, if at all. I know there's a group that works with gay people in, within the church, but the church itself calls these apostate type people. Apostasy, is it? Where they
apostate.
They question the question. Right. And if you could explain more what happens when the church finds out that you're a homosexual. The brethren.
Well, thankfully the church has actually softened their position a bit over the years. You know, I actually have met people who were excommunicated just for admitting to having feelings of homosexuality. And, you know, there's an unfortunate history of shock therapy. You know, there were students at BYU that were compelled to go into this shock therapy, this change therapy, you know, at the threat of being kicked out of the school otherwise. There have been some statements issued more recently in more recent years that perhaps gay people don't choose their homosexuality. Perhaps there is something else going on. Maybe it's biology and maybe it's genetics, maybe it's something else. But they still don't, gay people in the Mormon church still don't really have a place. I mean, one of the biggest things that the Mormon church is known for is how important family is. And they, in fact, believe that you can't attain heaven unless you're married. And, you know, there really aren't any answers. There are condemnations and there are calls for faith and hope, but there really is no place for a homosexual in the Mormon church.
Well,
Go ahead.
Well, who decided there's no place for homosexuals in the Mormon church? What is the basis for that?
Well, I think it's a policy issue, and those policies have changed over the years, and it kind of just depends on, you know, the church leadership and what decisions they make. And
because I'd gotten the idea from your book that members, you know, everyday members of the church don't really have any say as far as how things are done or things are changed. It's all got to do with current prophets that make these decisions.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly right. There is, you know, there's no kind of democratic conversation that goes on. It really, it's a top-down organization, and Mormons believe that the president of the church is a prophet who speaks directly to God. And so as it goes through that line of from one level to another down through that hierarchy, there really is no room for question or, you know, debate or changing of policy unless it comes from the brethren themselves.
Joe, you were actually talking about struggling when you were coming out as a gay man and all and being a Mormon. There was a period of time, I guess, when you had a girl waiting for you and you were going to marry, and I guess you went on your mission, and I mean, it's always pre-set up for you. I mean, is somebody set up who you marry and who you don't marry, or what happened with that?
Well, you know, I think for a lot of us who were raised in the Mormon church, we kind of grew up with this idea of, you know, life would follow one step after another. And, you know, you begin school, you go to high school, you get out of high school and go on a mission for 2 years, knocking on doors for 2 years. And then when you come back, you are expected to marry. And those things aren't just, you know, it's not just a cultural thing. They're actually commandments. They're considered commandments. Every young man is told that they should serve a mission. And then marriage itself is not just, you know, a cultural thing. It's not just something that happens, but you're really expected to do it because it's actually considered a commandment. So your life, from the time you're born into the Mormon church, there are a lot of things that are just kind of set out in front of you and you're expected to do.
Well,
I don't even remember ever making the decision to serve a mission for the church. It was just when I turned 19, that's just what you did.
And, of course, expected by your family to do so. And your family is a very important part of your life. And I appreciate that in the book. But I was amazed, and the family shunned when you came out eventually and explained to them who you really are. And I, there's something in the book that I liked very much, what you said. You'd rather be hated for who you are than loved for who you are not. And I think that's what your struggle finally brought that about, that it was important to be loved for what you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
It fits into this don't ask, don't tell thing that we were talking about earlier in the program today. Tell me,
it does. It's
what about affirmation? Are you tied in with that group at all today? That is a group of, I believe, Mormon people that represent the gay and lesbian and transgender people, a support group.
Yeah, it's actually, yeah, it's a wonderful organization. In fact, when I was first coming out of the closet, I turned to them, and it was one of the most amazing things to have grown up in that, in the bubble that I did, where I felt so isolated, and I went through so much of my life not even believing there was another gay Mormon in the world. And when I discovered Affirmation first online and saw that resource and then met some of those people, it was incredibly cathartic. It was amazing to see that there were people who had shared my same experience, and they had come through it, and they were living happy lives, to, you know, and really being true to themselves, and authenticity had seemed to have won out.
I want to ask you a question, Joe. What happened when you finally came out to your family and your parents?
Well, of course, it was, you know, it was kind of a rough road for all of us. I mean, just coming to terms with my own homosexuality was incredibly, you know, difficult and took so much soul searching. And I think one of the interesting things that my friend Millie Watts told me after I came out and things were, you know, kind of rocky, she said, you know, Joe, you need to realize that parents have to come out too. And while I had been spending all of those years holding this secret inside and then finally coming to terms with it and asking questions and dealing with it and struggling through what I was going to do, you know, I never had told my parents that I was going through that. And I think when I finally came out to them, it was a shock. And, you know, I think family members sometimes have a hard time with it, because not only do they have to deal with the potential shame that might come from having a gay son in that community, but they also have to deal with the shattering of dreams that they had for me since before I was born. You know, they wanted me to have what they had. They wanted me to have a family and to be married and to be a faithful member of the church. And I think all of a sudden when that news came out, it was probably the biggest threat they could possibly imagine, because it just shattered everything.
Joe, so, we're going to be right back with you. We're going to take a commercial break. But before we do, we're going to be taking call-ins. So anybody out there that wants to call in, speak to Joe, speak to Mark, speak to me, you can call 323-203-0815. That call-in number is 323-203-0815. We'll be back in just a few moments. Hold on, Joe, with Joe Dalen.
Are you looking to dye your poodle pink with a purple mohawk? Then do I have the place for you. From the gothic signage and the tattooed and pierced owner, the vibe at Euphoria Pet Salon is cheerfully gay. The spacious interior has open workstations, a well-stocked clothing and toy boutique, and a countertop loaded with gourmet treats. Services include shampoos using homeopathic products, hydrobath massages, pedicures and hairstylings, from straightenings to dreadlocks and tinted mohawks. Though unusual requests are commonplace, animal welfare is paramount. No piercings or tattoos, except on the owner. Open Tuesdays through Saturdays from 9 until 6 p.m., with extended hours on Thursday from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. Euphoria Pet Salon is located at 10538 Magnolia Boulevard, east of Cahuenga in North Hollywood. Give them a call at 818-760-2110, or you can stop by their website at euphoria.com. Now, let's get back to The Alternative with your host, Terry LeGrand, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Terry LeGrand. The show is called The Alternative, and on the line with us today we have Joe Dalen. Joe is the author of a book called Perfect. Thank you, Joe. I think Mark's got some more questions for you.
Okay.
Yes, in the book, Joe, you talked about the deep doctrines that you discovered, the 26 volumes of sermons from 19th century prophets and apostles within your church, and how you delved into them after getting the dust off of them, as you say, that they're not really read today by many people, and you spent a lot of time in your search as you were trying to find an identity within the Mormon faith. And now that these books that you discovered are neglected, and you brought up some of the contents, and I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about that today, especially when it deals with things like polygamy and homosexuality.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the most interesting things that happened to me during that time was the realization that the church doctrines had changed. That there were, you know, I was kind of raised with this idea that it's all or nothing, that the Mormon church is the only true church, it's the perfect church. And in my attempt to align myself with the Mormon church, I did study deeply. I really felt like, okay, these are prophets of God. There must be an answer for me somewhere. I just wasn't really finding any answers. So I did. I dug deep into these old books where there were a lot of discourses about polygamy, and you know, when the Mormon Church was practicing polygamy, and that was considered part of the path towards the highest level of heaven. And I think it was very confronting to me at the time, because I suddenly realized that, you know, there were things that had changed, that the idea of infallibility started to kind of fall away. And, you know, at that time, I certainly wasn't ready to let go of the Mormon Church. I was still very invested, and I did believe it to a really deep degree. But it was one of the first little seeds, I think, that was planted that made me think, you know, maybe there are other answers outside that I haven't considered. You know, maybe the church doesn't have a monopoly on the truth. Because if that had been the case, then things never would have changed.
Well, I was wondering, too, about if you give us a bit more of a background on the church and about Joseph Smith. Was he 14 when he discovered the tablets?
No, that was later in his life. The first vision that he talks about where God and Jesus appeared to him and told him not to join any other religion, that there would be a restoration. That happened when he was 14. When he began to produce the Book of Mormon, that was years later, actually.
Well, what happened to these tablets that he found?
Well, the story is that they were taken back to heaven. They were given to him for a period of time while he was able to translate them, and then the tablets were, the golden plates, as they called them, mm-hmm. were taken back by an angel back into heaven.
I was wondering, in my lifetime, I've seen changes within your church, especially its attitude towards African-Americans or black people. I remember this a few decades ago, when mixed marriage was completely taboo within your church, and the attainment of priesthood was denied black people, and that this has changed.
You're right.
This has changed over the last couple of decades, and I was wondering, do you think that accepting gay people as being born that way and as equal people will happen within your lifetime?
You know, that's something that I can't even conjecture on. I'm kind of grateful to hear that there are now some church leaders that are saying, yes, we believe that this, you know, this may be something that people are born with, that this is, you know, not necessarily a choice, which is what the position of the church had been in the past. But yeah, it's really interesting going back to the fact that the African Americans had been denied the priesthood before, and in fact it had been said that that would always be the case, that not until, you know, perhaps the second coming or the millennium or, you know, some future date, maybe at that point, not until that point would African Americans be given the priesthood. And when that changed, there was a statement made by one of the leaders of the church that said, you know, forget everything that we said before, forget everything that the other prophets said about this issue. We were speaking from a limited perspective, but now more light and knowledge has come into the world, and, you know, time to put that behind us. This is the truth now. You know, and they were very strictly speaking contradicting what had been said before. And that, in a way, it gave me some hope, because I felt like, well, you know, maybe if they're willing to allow further light and knowledge to come in and change policy, maybe homosexuality would eventually be accepted. But at that time in my life, it was actually quite frustrating too, because I was still trying to change. I was still trying to become straight, and I really wanted the Mormon Church to provide that for me. And well, it seemed like, you know, that possibility was just drifting farther and farther away.
Right. Well, I remember the days when this major change was made, and it was the chief prophet in that day, the president of the church. And I'm a bit of a cynic at times. I had said earlier in the program, as far as the don't ask, don't tell, that one of the reasons the Pentagon has changed its opinion is because they're running out of manpower, and they've got to get it wherever they can. And
yeah,
some people said that when the prophet in your church said, well, we should accept black people, African Americans, into the priesthood and also allow marriage between races, that a lot of it had to do with the football, that Brigham Young University represented what UCLA, a lot of UCLA and UC Berkeley students felt was a extreme bias, and they were saying they were going to boycott playing games, basketball games and football games with Brigham Young University, and which would create quite a turmoil among college sports. And it was about the same time that the president of the Mormon Church said he had a dream and had talked directly to God, who said that they should now be accepted into the priesthood and mixed marriages should be accepted. So, again, this is just my opinion, but it's what was a lot of people were saying at the time, that it was done as a step to make sure that Brigham Young basketball stayed in the major leagues. But going on.
I think public relations probably had a lot to do with that. And it will be interesting to see what, you know, what will happen with homosexuality in the future as it becomes more accepted and as people kind of finally realize that it's not that big of a deal and these are human beings too. I think if the church does hold on to this strict position that they always have, you know, unfortunately, I think they will just, you know, they'll start to lose their credibility. And we'll just have to see what happens.
Well, during your mission for 2 years, I believe it was 2 years, that's right, and you spent three weeks in preparation for that and a lot more time, of course, growing up. And you have to, it's like a male rite of passage when you're 19 and you visit people unannounced and find out where they are in life and see if they are interested in joining the Mormon faith. I was wondering what would happen when you visit people who were homosexual and would tell you they're homosexual. How could you possibly recruit them into your church?
Well, it's kind of amazing. The 2 years I spent were in Texas, and it was in a very conservative area of Texas, the very Southern Baptist, a lot of Pentecostals. And I don't think there were many out gay people around. And to be honest, I never once talked to anybody who was admittedly homosexual. It was kind of an interesting closed culture there as well. I did have some fellow missionaries that I knew really well. In fact, I was the kind of their leader, and they met a guy and where they were teaching him the lessons, and he actually agreed to join the church, and then they found out later that he was gay. And it was this big dilemma. What do you do? You know, how could this person fit in the church? Should we allow him to get baptized? Should we allow him in? And I certainly had no answers, and what these other missionaries did was contact my mission president, who is the authority in the area, and they asked him what to do, and he said to stop teaching them. To stop teaching him, to not go back, to just let him. He wasn't interested at all in allowing this man to be baptized.
Which goes along with what you said in your book about the three biggest enemies of the Mormon faith are feminism, intellectualism, and homosexuality. Which is quite a statement.
I'd like to think I'm all three of those, actually.
Good for you.
I want to ask you something, and this is something this has always sort of been a story on the street.
Number one, you got to learn to ride a bicycle. I know that's true. Number two is that you always travel in pairs, and the reason for doing that is so that if you now I don't know how true this is, if you ran into a person that was a homosexual, or you ran into a woman that was a little promiscuous or something, that you'd have somebody there to kind of keep you from falling into the ranks of sin. Is that the purpose of that, or is that all an old wives' tale?
No, I think that has a lot to do with that. I'm not sure if that's the only reason, but we were told that often. This was the Lord's program, that he would send these missionaries two by two because they would support each other in their mission, and they would kind of keep each other on the straight and narrow. So I think that has a lot to do with it, yeah.
Okay, Mark.
Well, Joe, you came from a very, very loving family, which I believe most Mormons do, except when it comes to homosexuality. And I was surprised. I know throughout the book, you spend an awful lot of time with your mother and show great love for your mother, which I hope is still the case. But there was one time in the book that I was really surprised, and because your faith believes in being a gentle community and not to cause waves, and someone upset your mother at one time when you were young, and she said, "Oh, that fag," and I think it hurt you and it hurt me, and I was wondering if today she would use such a term.
Oh, I don't. I think there's absolutely no way she would ever say anything like that again. I think, and she actually didn't say fag. She said that she had a problem with the fact that President Clinton had let queers into the military. And I think coming from that culture, the Mormon culture, the Utah culture, I should maybe say, there was a justification, a doctrinal justification to kind of delegate these people to this, this category of being misfits. And, right. I don't think that was ever something that was a pleasant thing or totally accepted, but it was justified to a degree. I mean, I remember growing up hearing Mormons around me saying that AIDS was God's curse on homosexuals.
It's more than just Mormons. Right.
And so there was kind of that, there's almost this permission that's given because of the religious views to be derogatory.
Right, because they figure they're the bottom of the totem pole. Now, tell me this, when a person goes to Utah, myself, I've been there a few times, and I've always felt like, I'm not accepted here, so I'm not going to spend too much time here. Is there anybody in elected politics ever that's not a Mormon? I know all the members of the State Supreme Court are Mormons. I would be kind of frightened as far as being tried in such a situation. Everyone seems to be a Mormon that has elective office, including your Senator Ensign, and that's the name of the Mormon Church official newspaper. It's the Ensign. And here you've got a Senator Ensign. And it just sounds almost to me at times like there's a conspiracy.
Well, I think, when you have a state that's a vast majority of, 65 to 70% of Utahns are Mormon, so it certainly would, people tend to vote for those who hold their same values and who they can relate to. And I think Mormons, the first question they ask when they're thinking about who to vote for is whether or not this person is a Mormon. Salt Lake City is actually a little bit of a different story. We've had several mayors that are not Mormon. They're actually quite liberal. Salt Lake City is less. The last number I heard was it's less than a third Mormon. And actually, when I lived in Salt Lake, after coming out of the closet, I lived there for about a year, and most of the Mormons I met weren't even active Mormons. So Salt Lake City is a very different place than you would think. There's still this, there's still definitely a large Mormon presence because of the temple is there and the church headquarters are there, but the culture of Salt Lake is actually quite liberal.
I wanted to ask you a question. As you know, we had Proposition 8 here in the state of California, which was to legalize gay marriage, and the Mormon Church spent a fortune, lots and lots of money, channeling money into the No on 8 campaign. here in California, and I beg your pardon?
I think it was Yes on 8.
Oh, Yes on 8. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Anyway, they channel money in the Yes on 8 campaign against gay marriage. And what's your sort of position on that? I mean, how do you, as a gay man, being a Mormon, living in Utah, sort of handle this when, you know, your church, the politics that were involved, the money that people have given seems to be going to this anti-gay cause?
Yeah, it's very heartbreaking. I mean, I actually don't really, I'm not a believing Mormon, so it doesn't really confront any of my beliefs. I more or less left the church 10 or 12 years ago. But there, you know, it still is a lot of who I am. It's where I'm from. It's who my family is. And it was really unfortunate watching the way that created a big division within families. You know, I think in a lot of cases there were families that were starting to heal and starting to come to terms with maybe a gay family member, and unfortunately the church, by asking its members to donate time, to donate money, to really make a big deal out of it, it left a lot of members of the church, even with gay family members, in this position where they felt like they had to make a decision. They had to choose between their faith, which essentially is choosing between God, and choosing between maybe their son or their brother. And it created a lot of conflict. You know, there were even stories of gay youth that took it all the way to suicide because they were so heartbroken by their church, by their institution that they had so much invested in, you know, that was doing everything they could to fight who they really were. Right. And I unfortunately think it really set them back a long ways, for at least a lot of people.
Well, a lot of people here in California also felt that it set us back quite a ways too, that so
yeah.
much money that poured in that was anti-gay money. But yeah, there's a question I've always had, and you talked about the temples and the temple here in California, in Los Angeles, that you saw, that I've always been a student of architecture, and I've always felt I've never seen a decent-looking temple that for the Mormon faith. They are always without windows, and they always feel so cold and sterile. And then I'm thinking beyond architecture, where do the Mormons stand as far as the arts? I can't think of people, famous artists or composers or... just in business, it seems, are the leaders from the Mormon community. We don't find them in the arts or the humanities, and that might have something to do with their hatred of homosexuals.
It might. I don't know. I'm actually, yeah, I don't know enough about the arts to know how involved, you know, individual Mormons might be, apart from, you know, Donnie and Marie.
Right.
But they, yeah.